Distinguishing the difference of sport or fitness for sport or competitive fitness versus for general physical preparedness, which is an important distinction.
Yes.
And it's blurred by CrossFit very often. Because it's hard to distinguish sport versus CrossFit for health sake or fitness sake.
Yeah.
It's definitely merged a little too close together for a lot of different people now. And I think that as far as getting people reorganized to be training to make their life improve, that it's worth untangling.
Yeah, and it's even swung back and forth, like at CrossFit headquarters, you can see like in the beginning years, there wasn't even a sport. It was more like who posts the best time online.
Yeah.
And then it was the sport evolved and that became like huge, and then Reebok got involved. And then that's all CrossFit was a sport. And then Greg Glassman was like, screw the sport.
Yeah, the pendulum swings and that's every which direction.
And he's like, we're just going to do like old people working out in their living rooms with water jugs.
Yeah.
And then now it's like at a place where it's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of lost. Like, who?
Yeah.
Both ends of the spectrum.
It's kind of chaos right now, if you think. There's so many tents hitting and splintering off in so many different directions.
Right.
My, I guess, picture of the future with the CrossFit thing is there has to be a rebranding of CrossFit as a sport, which has gone that way, and CrossFit as a methodology for the general population, which has gone this way.
Yeah.
And it sucks to see, well, I don't know if it sucks, but it's interesting to watch the kind of convoluted nature of it, because it's such a good, meaningful thing, product to bring to the world. But when it gets mixed in with the competition side of it, and it's hard to decipher, especially as a new person, what's what. Like, right. What I see on TV versus what's happening in my affiliate, I think you can get pulled in the wrong direction a lot of times.
And CrossFit had the media team for a while, like from 2010 to 2016, and it was like, you knew the athletes, you knew what they were doing, what they were eating. It was like so cool to see them compete, and like you bought into like who they are. Now you don't really see that anymore.
Yeah.
And so it just feels like
lost its initial.
Yeah. So that's for me, like, I don't have that much interest in the games right now, just because there's not much being put out about it.
Right.
Yeah. And I think a good just general for people listening, like a general question to ask yourself is, am I training for a competition or an event, or am I training to improve the quality of my life? And you kind of touched on that, and like, be honest about the answer to that. And if the answer isn't you're training for a competition, then you need to evaluate the way you are training and what intensity and what volume and in what direction you're, you know, progressing.
Yeah.
And even, if you think about affiliates, like, it's been really hard for affiliates to find their identity if they're a CrossFit affiliate, because it's like, are we pushing the sport, or are we pushing this to, you know, moms and dads, grandparents? Like, what are we doing? And we've been lucky where the reason why I originally liked CrossFit is because of the health aspect. So we've always been following like health, right?
And accessible to everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And if someone does want to compete, like, if that excites you, we've always been there to support them. But throughout our entire existence, like, we've always been about health is like our number one thing, you know. So,
and I think that's the number one thing of CrossFit in general, like, as a methodology,
right?
It's not necessarily tailored for the sport side as much as it is the long-term health benefits,
right? Yeah,
and biomarker improvement and composition.
It is far more impactful for, I mean, the well-being of everyone in the community to treat it as what it is, to prepare you for living your life well, rather than, I mean, so much so that I've worked with a lot of competitive fitness athletes, and some of them high level, that I wouldn't even encourage, even though I liked it and I did it for a long time. I wouldn't encourage someone to pursue competitive fitness because I'd rather them live a happy life and a productive life, rather so than devote themselves to competitive fitness. It's just, right. Just don't think it's worth all the energy you put in. Yeah, rather than it helping you live with your family better, live with your kids better, live with living as fruitfully as you can and abundantly as you can outside of the gym. So yeah. Ultimately, the biggest bang for your buck is just using the gym as a tool to improve outside of the gym.
And we've, like, over the 13 years we've been around, there's been a lot of people that have, like, lost friendships, lost, you know, relationships, whatever, over being insanely competitive in CrossFit. It's like,
oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Where and it's like, all right, you're giving all this up. All right, I understand if you're going to be like the best in the world one day. Like,
right.
All right, I get it. That's a noble cause. But then it's like 6 years later, they're not even doing CrossFit
right,
anymore.
Right, exactly.
It's like, what? Why?
And
why
that's where it's a very important to note, because we all have addictions, all of us, right? And whether we point those addictions into the right directions and how much we point our energy into those addictions. Because right. Whether they're good addictions or bad addictions, they can still consume us if we're not careful. So we still can't have too much of an addiction to, like, working out, for example, because there's other things in life that you need to devote your energy to, unless you're dropping everything and you're rich filming.
Right.
And that's all you're going to commit yourself to. Life demands too much of you to put too much energy into just exercise.
Right.
Yeah, and I think there are definitely those, like, maverick type individuals who, like, that's what they do, right? Like, there has to be, there's certain, you know, let's say personality types that's fitting to be completely wholly devoted to one thing, but I don't think that's the majority of people, you know?
And it's such a nominal amount of people that I would bet any amount of money that no one here would live their happiest life.
Right.
And that's even all natural by doing that.
Yeah.
You mean like the Michael Jordans, like
that? Well, even beyond that, just like, maybe not that level, just, you know, professional athletes in general.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I think it's nice to have, like, those, you know, 1% of the 1% as, like, it can motivate some people to get off the couch and all that. I think it's. I don't want to, like, shun on those type of people because I think it's important to have that. But.
Right. Yeah. But I think a lot of, like you said, with CrossFit, it's easier to convolute that than it is. If you're a basketball player and you know you're a recreational basketball player, you probably aren't training like you're going to go to the NBA.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But if you're a recreational CrossFitter and you're going to come
in, there's so many, yeah.
Train like a games athlete.
Right.
You know, it's just more, the lines are blurrier because
yeah.
It's a little more accessible.
It's somehow easier to get sucked into training an obscene amount of time with CrossFit.
Mm.
Than it is for, like, for if you're training for basketball. Like, you're not going to see a 30-year-old dude train for basketball, like, 3 or 4 hours at a time. Like,
Mike Benson, are you listening?
Does he do that?
No. He's addicted to the grind of the basketball.
Yeah, just and always getting banged up.
Yeah. So we bust his chops. But, yeah, it's totally, that's a good analogy, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, nobody would, like, a 30-year-old father... Would you never expect him to be like, sorry, I gotta go practice today for 4 hours. I'm gonna
make dinner. Kids, play with the toys by yourself.
Yeah, but that does exist in like the CrossFit world. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna be home after work for 4 hours.
It does happen. Yeah.
It's like, so.
And that I know that happens because I've been that person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you said this really eloquently. I think is life demands too much of you to devote all your time to training. And like, even just recently with me, like being a homeowner and being a husband and having other things, and then like there would be times where I'm going to do something and I'm like, I'm fucking smoked.
Yeah.
Like I don't even have like enough gas in the tank. But I put that somewhere at the gym.
Yeah.
I should be putting this in my backyard.
That addiction called you and held you.
I'm like, hey, maybe take a thought here for a second and see what I'm devoting my resources to.
And that's actually like working out too, the homework a lot of times.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I'd rather do it lifting dumbbells
than moving rocks.
Yeah.
I've had a light bulb go on.
Yeah.
But
the same stuff.
I know, it's tough when you're young and capable to not overdo things.
Yeah, but I like to use those experiences, like lifting rocks, whatever, climbing, as motivation to train the right way while you're in the gym. Because, mm-hmm. again, if you're overtraining in the gym, you're not going to be able to, let's call it the game of living the rest of your life well. Yeah. So,
yeah, like when I was building my patio, I had built a foundation of fitness, so it made me able to like move heavy rocks and go a long day of just moving gravel and stone around and stuff. So that foundation of fitness helped me, but at the same time, like I wasn't able to train 3 hours a day in the gym, yeah. plus that. So it was like I was actually getting fitter by doing like functional stuff, I guess, like, you know, moving rocks around.
Yeah.
So I in my head, I kind of enjoyed it, where it's like, all right, I'm moving, I'm being active, I'm lifting yeah. heavy things.
Yeah,
I'm
not that's training in a way almost.
It is.
In its own way, you know? Whatever, like, intention you bring to it.
Right.
But even so, when we're not outside of the gym, it doesn't seem like we are as eager to use our body like we do in the gym. Like, how often we climb ropes all the time, how often do we climb trees? Right? How often do we see a rock and we just want to get to the top of it? Mm. Sometimes we get out of that mindset, except for in the gym, that we're going to do things like that.
Physical.
Right. We're like, nah, I'm not climbing that rock. No, it's not in the gym, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But if we started being more playful like kids, like you look at kids and they live such happy lives, a lot of them, and they're just seeking every opportunity they can to use their bodies, not because they want to work out, because it's fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's a better place for us to be, is to not see the gym as the place where the only place that we can use our bodies and have fun.
Yeah. And that's, again, I think I've said this probably same statement on other podcasts in relation to other things, but that idea is baked into CrossFit methodology already, right from the jump. Is the top of the pyramid is regularly learn and play new sports. It's not train, and then apply it to more training.
Yeah.
It's go use it doing something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think in the earlier days in my fitness career, I'd want to put 3 hours in the gym doing a powerlifting cycle or something like that. But now it's like maybe I'll go for a swim or a hike where it's like I'm outside and it's fun, or
yeah.
play spike ball with friends or something. You
know? Oh, yeah. Like, I would even venture to say I would never sacrifice a chance to actually go out and do something for going to the gym. Like, to do something physical outside, like a game or like a hike. Never. I don't think it would ever be worth it for you to be like, no, I can't go on this hike. I can't go to this waterfall. I can't do this and that. So I can go work out for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Because those opportunities don't come all the time. So if you get a chance to, seize upon them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you're the person who's like always going swimming and playing in waterfalls and climbing in trees.
Yeah.
Then maybe you could benefit by coming to the gym more often.
Yeah.
But I've never met anybody.
Right. I've never seen it myself. And if they're doing all that stuff, they're getting a good workout in too. Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's worth noting for like a younger person who's trying to be a competitive athlete, like, yes, you do need to put in the time and effort and reps, but that should be with the knowledge that you're going to compete and you're going to be put on a stage where you're going to need to uphold a certain level of fitness and skill, right? But that's not everybody.
Yeah.
And if you're not planning on competing at something or somewhere at a certain point, then just do a quick kind of reflection, is your training aligned with that or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One noticing that I've had too is that there's far too many of us that treat each day like it's a competition. Not a day of training, but you're just, with the gamification of a lot of the workouts, just doing your best to get the highest score on the board, no matter how it happens. And I think that's an egregious error that should be avoided, that you're trying to train for the stimulus. For example, even like some people might dismiss something like the tempo squat. I know the tempo squats and the tempo work has been on there for a little bit now. I think a lot of people have been capitalizing on it. But some people might be like, no, I'm not doing it because it just doesn't seem like as competitive, right? But if they start doing that, if they're realistic about what like their training age, for example, is if they're they haven't been squatting for very long. I can 100% guarantee them they're going to get a lot more out of tempo work than they were for pull-ups. Is a good example of that too, because so many of us, the pull and push patterns are much weaker than the squat and bend patterns. So if they're doing that tempo work for there, then they're going to get the dose response. It's going to elicit the best results from that with some regularity. Later on, it would be good to start switching it up to an intensification. But just recognizing that you're training for the dose response in each day, you're not training for a score.
Yeah, I think that's like as a CrossFit affiliate, there's always been that struggle with the sport and the everyday, you know, Joe coming in here. But then it's also, there's a struggle with how do you program for people that have been here for 10 years versus people that have been just starting, you know. And I think any good program, like, there should be a level of like on ramping with really basic, slow, controlled movement and all that stuff that we've talked about a lot. But so that was kind of our answer to that we came up.
Yeah, that's an excellent solution.
Yeah,
to have different options on there for people that have done it a while, right, and for people that want to go back and accumulate time retention, not just for people that have done it a while. It's good for a lot of people to do. It cover a lot more ground with who it reaches as far as what's going to get the best results too.
And ultimately, it comes down to the individual in the class, because you can make classes as well versed and applicable to everybody as possible, but ultimately, like, the individual needs to have some level of accountability.
And awareness.
I think if we are realistic about like where our capacity is, if let's say we do front squats routinely and we know, I think a lot of us do know, we just ignore the fact of it, that it doesn't feel very well. It doesn't feel like it should. Like, you know, you're out of position, it kind of feels awkward, then you're probably a really good candidate for that slower tempo work. So just the tempo work by itself is an excellent teacher for moving well without even having a good coach around. The tempo work will put you into better, more efficient positions.
Yeah.
It's like with the, you've kind of always had like RX scaled sport, right? And to me, that's almost like the vertical axis of the scaling, you know, model with CrossFit. But what was missing, and I think what we're starting to realize and implement, is the horizontal axis, like where a person's training age is at and how we can scale that way and bring them to a better place. So it's nice to have more of that two-dimensional approach to it, instead of just like, well, here's the harder version, here's the easier version.
Right.
It's also like, well, where are you in skill development, strength development?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say, especially in those areas of skill and strength development.
Speaking of the RX scale, I think here's what I found too, is that most people shouldn't even be touching RX weights if they're training for dose response, if they're training to get the best bang for the buck. In fact, that's another example of people thinking of it like a sport. If their ambitions are every time to do RX, and they're ignoring big red flags that tell them that we shouldn't be doing that, because they're seeing that and the game is to do it at this weight, at this modality of moving. But really, I think we should be very close, not ignore those red flags that are saying we should go down in weight. We shouldn't do this movement. We're not prepared to do it.
RX is more for the coach, I think, to know what the stimulus is intended.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of why we do RX, is so that our coaches know, like, all right, it's a 95-pound thruster. That means light. It doesn't mean 95 pounds.
Exactly. If it's not kind of interpreted like that, it's just an arbitrary number that doesn't apply to an individual.
Right.
So, but if the client has the wherewithal to see it as a number, I should do this as light, and the coach is good at explaining that 95 means moderately light, then that's going to be a lot better for everyone involved.
Right.
And I think it's different. Here's another flip side of the coin for a competitive athlete is, like, you're going to have standard weights if you're going to be competitive. You got to be able to, you know, the benchmark. You got to be able to clean and jerk 225, 155 for reps. You got to be able to deadlift over 400 pounds or over whatever, 250 pounds. And so, like, having those numbers that are more concrete is applicable if you're going to be a competitive athlete.
However, here's what I'll contend. is that it's not yet until you get to a certain level.
Right, you gotta earn that.
Well, unless you have those baselines where you should be getting to, and then you can start applying whatever RX is thrown on there. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you should be doing a, even if you're trying to compete, you should be doing a 225 pound clean and jerk, but your clean and jerk is only 235.
Right.
So you still have to get to a high enough level for that's even relevant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I also think, as far as if most of us are not doing it for high level competition, that it, we'd be better served to go off percentages of what about what that would should be rather than the weight. Because if you have someone that weighs 140, even if they want to compete, they're doing a god awful heavy snatch, then that's a liability for them if they keep doing that for rep after rep, right?
Right. Yeah, it's like you have to reach a certain level before you can step into the ring, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've, in the last probably year or so, personally turned a leaf with, like, seeing the return on certain investment with fitness, where, like, all right, what is if I look out 5 years and I keep training the way I was, what does that mean for my life and how I'm going to feel and what I'm going to get from it? First, if I train a little more reserved, or not even reserved, but more intelligently, and I play that out for 5 years, what is that going to give me in terms of how I feel and what it brings to my life? And, like, there's no comparison to, like, those projections. If I'm training more intelligently, I'm going to feel better, be less injury prone, still making progress, but my life will be more abundant. Versus if I'm training like a competitive CrossFitter, but I'm never actually being a competitive CrossFitter, I'm going to get hurt.
And your sport is literally just every single day you come in. Right, like when you're coming and you're treating each workout like that's a competition. That and that kind of, I was talking to someone about like the, how the, what they decide how they put into what each workout is. And I would think a good approach, or I know a good approach, is that you can't give 100% to every day of the week, but you can look at what would you would get the most, the biggest return on investment for putting a higher to that 100%. And choose 1 or 2 days of the week that is going to be worthy of you trying a little harder for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I think for most people, having like 2 out of 6 push days makes sense.
Yeah.
Like where you're getting close to the threshold.
Yeah.
Not going over it.
But even distinguishing between if you're pushing for strength versus you're pushing for the capacity piece.
Yeah.
That maybe you're not. It's unlikely that you're going to push both. Right. If you're gonna go really hard for the strength, then you'll probably want to back off for the capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is good food for thought for everybody. And a lot of people get it right. Like, there's plenty of examples in all of our gyms of people who really get it right and who last. Like a lot of the tenure members, it's like they've found a way to make it an iterative game where they keep getting better and not get hurt.
Right,
so there definitely are people who get it right, but I think there's at least a percentage of the population, not just here, just in the CrossFit space in general, who get it out of balance.
Yeah.
And it makes sense why, because it's so kind of convoluted, like,
yeah,
what's what.
Like, and it's fun to be like, push, like...
Yeah, and that's like, that was the culture
right.
for a long time.
Yeah.
But
I think that's like the... Another thing is, like, as an affiliate, do you dumb down CrossFit and get rid of, like, the snatch and the heavy lifting and all that stuff because it's so, like, it doesn't apply to a lot of new people coming in, you know, or it's not as beneficial to a lot of new people coming in, or do you just stick to CrossFit and, like, not reach as many people necessarily, you know, like, look at, like, all the Orange Theories and like those kind of like like bubble or like I guess popularized versions of CrossFit.
I would think that you could absolutely be inclusive of all those movements. However, it would be like when someone is first coming in to learn jiu-jitsu, they're not going to start off with some advanced techniques, right? They're going to start off very simply.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about snatch and clean and jerk, those are an advanced technique. It's not going to be day one or whatever. Month one that you start getting into snatch and clean and jerk, especially if you have no background with it at all. But later on down the road, that's something that you can start considering as using more than just a skill work. Right?
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction is, like, even in elements, a lot of times we'll take the, if where teaching them Olympic lifting, take it as a skill day where you're just being exposed to the movement and seeing if you can coordinate your body to make a certain shape, basically, at the right time and get into the right movement patterns. But we're not asking you to move load, and we're also not, hopefully not fatiguing you to a point where that movement's going to break down. But like a lot of the snatch is a good one, but there's a lot of others where if you teach it as a skill, it's good. But as far as a new person, you don't necessarily need to add the intensity to that skill until years down the road.
Right.
But it's still good for them to know how to do perform a snatch, even if it's on a PVC pipe.
Yeah.
And I think we've, like, as a gym, we've come pretty far as, like, how can we still get all the benefits from strength training and Olympic lifting, but also allow it to be approachable and create some sort of, like, on-ramp process for new people, and still make it, you know, affordable where it's not you're paying personal training for the first year. Because, I mean, ideally that's exactly what people do. They do personal training for a long time, and then they do, like, semi-private training or something, and then they go to classes.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's not an option for a lot of people. But
Levi had a really good, I guess, metric in a way, or like a measuring tool for roughly if you're doing things right or wrong in the big picture, is if injuries to you are just par for the course, and if you think to yourself, well, I'm a CrossFitter, this just comes with the territory.
It goes along with the territory. Yeah.
It shouldn't.
No, definitely shouldn't.
If you're trying to make it to the games, it's part of the it's a part of the risk that you're taking to do something at that level. But if you're just training to be fitter and healthier, getting injured consistently over and over should not be part of the plan.
You should not be resigning yourself to that occasional injury that sets you back, then you got to recover, and then maybe eventually that turns into a surgery. Absolutely not. Everyone should be getting healthier by your training, not getting more and more glued together.
And
that's a really good point. Yeah,
it's like just an easy, if I'm the person that's always hurt, I got to change how I'm doing things.
And I've been doing our programming and doing CrossFit for almost 15 years, and I, knock on wood, have not had any injuries. I've had like aches and pains and stuff like that, but I've never had like a big injury, because I've dabbled in the sport. I like that side of things, but I've always just been here for like trying to get as fit and healthy as I can, you know?
Well, one thing that I've kind of discovered is that you have to have the right balance of desire. I call it desire or ambition to do well, but not competitiveness in the beginning, right? Because if the people that are hyper-competitive from the get-go, and it's a fun addiction, a lot of times people didn't do a bunch of sports when they were growing up, so this is the first time they felt like athletes.
Right.
And then so they get really hyper-competitive, the least amount of, ultimately, that'll limit how competitive they can be in the long run. Like, because if they're not focusing, like probably like you did, with never having getting hurt, focusing on moving really well, like I know you move really well, focusing on developing in the right way, and not just going for it each day. But if you didn't move well, you take note of it and reanalyze and figure out how to move well, rather than just trying to push the pace and survive anyway, which happens. Then that's likely that hyper competitiveness, just to go. And not try and go efficiently, and that's going to result in the setbacks that often happen, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I always did want to be, I always wanted to, like, place well in the open and you know, do as well as I could, but never to the point where it would sacrifice how I move or risk injury.
Yeah, and that's where people should be cautious to recognize, am I doing that?
But if I didn't have that want to be better, then I probably wouldn't be motivated. So it is like, you gotta find that balance.
Dichotomy.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think, like, even Matt Frazier, he started as an Olympic lifter, right? And for the longest time, he didn't do much beyond the barbell for a very long time, because he had to learn to move perfectly with the barbell at an Olympic lifting only gym. And because he's established that strong base and moving well with Olympic lifting, which is the likely near the top three most technical movements in CrossFit, top two probably, that he was able to carry that very far with everything that he did, because he made sure that he moved perfectly with very light weight. Later on, he could go very heavyweight and still move perfectly.
Right. Yeah, a lot of the best CrossFitters in the world now are Olympic lifters that are have picked up conditioning.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I think we brought this up maybe a couple episodes ago, but it seems, hopefully, that the direction of the sport side of it is starting to take note of, like, well, we can't just crown the best weightlifter of the year.
Yeah.
And we got to start crowning people who are actually functionally fit, and they're adding a lot more, like, high-skill gymnastics, odd-object lifting and carrying. Like,
yeah, running a marathon.
Yeah, things that are more
applicable. Climb a mountain with, like, some actual rock climbing involved. Like,
or get crazy with a backpack or something. Yeah.
Shoot a deer and then carry it out.
This is Hunger Games, not CrossFit. Yeah.
But I think, as the CrossFit Games has kind of dwindled a little bit, I think we were talking earlier, I think they need to, like, sell it to someone that's like a media company or something that will just take it away, and then CrossFit can focus on certifications and, like, the affiliate model and stuff, because the CrossFit Games has potential to be huge.
Yeah.
But it's not, and I think that's not, they don't have the skill to grow it into something huge that's on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what it needs, because then you get the money and you can pay the athletes and all that stuff.
And then also a recognition by more people that the way they train is entirely different,
right,
from the way a normal person wants to train.
And maybe don't call it the CrossFit Games, call it, like,
the Fitness on Earth
or something. Yeah. Because it's confusing to call it.
Right, it's too specific at that point.
Right. Yeah. And we didn't even mention this, but I think it is worth mentioning. The people who go to the CrossFit Games aren't just taking a class every day and aren't just doing a normal GBP program, right? Like, maybe that's for us, it just seems like, yeah, duh, but for others, it's like they're going to be having cycles of the year that are specific to, hey, I'm in a strength building cycle, or I'm in a running cycle, or I'm in a gymnastics cycle, and they're peaking at certain times of the year for competition. So they're not just training for life and longevity, they're training for one specific adaptation at a specific part of the year.
Yep.
And they're trying to, you know, roll into their competition at the peak that they can with all those things. So it is a very different approach as far as...
And even peaking from what open style workouts to regional style workouts.
Yep.
And then to game style workouts.
Yeah, there's a lot, more.
And recognizing too, like, they're peaking, there's only a certain amount of years now. Like, I think you'll see CrossFit athletes, just like swimmers, they're going to peak between like 18 and 23 because the recovery is so important in CrossFit. Yeah. And so you only have the rest of it. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's another good word too, is I remember one from my first gym, somebody said, and I should have listened back then, but you can't train like a pro and recover like an amateur. And I think that's the majority of people who are on the cusp of being like a really high level CrossFitter, train like the high level CrossFitters do, but don't do the other side of it, which is spend money on recovery and make sure you sleep perfect, nutrition's perfect, and you're getting body work done, and pretty much all the other parts of your life have to support that type of training. And most of the time it's like, no, I'm just jumping into my car and off to the rest of my day and sit at a job and whatever.
That's a really good point, that if someone tells me that they're competitively training, and they're, or even just training too hard, and they're not sleeping and eating well, I am like, that is foolish. That is very, like, beyond foolish. Like, you gotta get your stuff together with how you recover and how you eat. Otherwise, it's a humongous liability at that point.
Yeah, and you're also grinding the gears. Like, you might gain some capacity, but the adaptation is going to be half or less of what it would be if you were taking care of all the other stuff.
But injury happens so much faster. If ultimately we're trying to avoid injury as the number one goal, injury happens so... It's a pretty astonishing how much more injurious it is to train with low sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw a study, I think it's been like a year now, but the most indicative factor in injury is sleep.
So sleep, yeah.
Lack of sleep, that's the number one cause of injuries. So whenever anybody is like coming to me and has kind of like continuing aches and pains and stuff, that's the first thing I always ask. Like,
yeah.
How much do you sleep every night?
Right.
And usually it's like, 4 or 5 hours.
Right. you know, stay up too late watching the TV or
this
and that. Well, that was quite a bit of meat on that bone, huh?
There was. There was. And I don't want to sound, like, as coaches, discouraging to anybody who has aspirations, right? Like, if there are people out there who want to, like, you know, test their limits, just understand what comes with that type of commitment is. All the other things have to fall in line. You can't just, it's not something you can do half-assedly and expect it to work out in your favor.
Yeah.
And it used to be, I think that's the confusion, is like in 2009 or 10, like, you could be a regular Joe, have a full-time job.
Yeah.
And then you work out an hour a day and you make it to the CrossFit Games.
Yeah, you just gotta be kind of on the higher end of athletics, you know?
Right, but now it's like, that's your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And for, what's the grand prize now? What is it, $200,000?
Yeah, I think it's like...
It might be $300,000 now.
Yeah.
Well, for a trip, you devote your whole life to working out.
Considering that, like, that's why I think it needs, they need to sell the games, because it's... Like, it just doesn't work right now. You have people that are, devoting their lives and maybe making, like,
yeah,
10 grand a year.
Pennies.
From sponsorship.
Right.
And they're the 30th fittest person in the world.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is, like...
It's just not, it's not worth all the effort right now.
Can you imagine the...
It's not inviting people to want to do it,
The 30th best football player in the world, like, they're making a lot more than just free protein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's why it needs to be, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, it doesn't lure people in to be sustainable.
Yeah. A good takeaway for everybody is just kind of, I guess, take stock of where you're headed. Do that 5-year projection. If you haven't done that, especially if you're a young person, if I keep up the path I'm on in 5 years, will I be sitting pretty or not?
Right.
And then make adjustments. It depends on what you want out of your training, but it ultimately should serve you, not hurt you.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, knowing what you want is really the hardest part. Mm-hmm. What you really want.
Yeah. Not what the algorithm wants for you.
Yeah. Not what your ego wants.
It's a toughie.
Yeah.
All right. Season 742 comes to an end.
All right. Another season.